From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, June 28th. Every week, this podcast brings you the news that shapes the geospatial industry, location-based information technology, and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Today's topic is Google Earth Builder. We ran a webinar 2 weeks ago that lit up the Twitter sphere. We'll discuss the product functionality, but also the disruptive ripples to the pool of other cloud-based solutions. Has Google solved your cloud and big data problem all in one swoop? We'll discuss that and more, but first a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. You can now access ArcGIS on your Microsoft Windows Phone 7 device. Download the free app from the Zune Marketplace. For more information, visit esri.com/windowsphone.
First, Adina, I'd like to offer a small disclaimer to our listeners, since Google is an advertiser with Directions Magazine and paid us to sponsor the webinar. The other thing I want to mention is that we usually don't do product reviews. We generally leave that to independent reviewers. So the objective here is not so much to critique features and functions. We feel it's really necessary to better understand this particular product's impact on the industry at large, particularly because cloud computing seems to be on everybody's hit list of necessary technologies to investigate. And we did a first review of this when Google announced it at Wear 2.0. So we're kind of revisiting this based on what we know, what we saw in this webinar, and to try to give a little bit of a better understanding to our listeners. I do want to review some of the product functionality, if only from the standpoint to give people a perspective on what's going on. They've developed what they call their geo infrastructure. This infrastructure is what Google Earth itself leverages to render all the maps together. And from what I gathered from the webinar, their philosophy is to provide this rich data catalog in the cloud to upload mapping data. It could be vector data, it could be raster data, and some of that has to do with the pricing model and how people publish it, which we'll discuss a little bit. Another big feature is the metadata catalog, the ability to drill down, to see attribution, get access control, see the geometry type that's associated with each data. The storage is specific to mapping data. You can natively host shape files and CSVs and KMLs. You could do imagery that's in GeoTIFF or Mr. SID. The one interesting thing that I think you take away from this is that all the reprojections are done automatically, and that's kind of the magic behind the scenes. A lot of people spend a lot of time doing reprojections and feathering and integrating imagery, and that's something that I think really got people jazzed a little bit. The tiling is done automatically, and this is not just done on small scale. It's done on a very large scale. Again, they're leveraging all of that processing infrastructure that people know and love about Google Earth, and they're making that available to the geospatial community. There's a lot of other services about this, how maps are styled and rendered. They're providing some basic cartographic display rules, attribute-based display, map rendered by scale, opacity styles, the typical things you'd want to do. There's some basic analytics that you can do, and a lot of the underlying technology is being leveraged from the Google Fusion tables, which, if anybody has used that and seen our DMTV video and some of the other things we've discussed, this is considered a superset of Google Fusion tables. So it's more or less built on top of that. So there's a lot going on the behind the scenes here that Google has taken from their core set of technology and made it available to the average user, not the least of which is the administrative things, and we'll get to that later, because I want to stop and Adina, let you kind of chime in here, because is this so much disruptive, having seen some of the product functionality? What are we seeing here from Google that made the Twitter sphere lit up so much, and maybe provide a different perspective on really what's going on?
I think what's really going on is that Google's enterprise solution, and that's the term they use for Google Earth Builder, is really aimed at taking a big bite out of the headache of hosting and publishing your maps. And I used very simple terms to describe that because I think what they really want to do is simplify it down so that a reasonably savvy person in a county, state government could actually upload, manage, set the access to the data, and have it look beautiful to those who look at it. And then there's a pretty firm line as to how far you can go. And on the other side of that line are more specific kinds of solutions that offer higher levels of processing and analysis and other sets of tools. So I think they sort of scoped out a box, and maybe it's an 80% box. We talked about that when we first talked about this technology, and sort of drew a line as to how far they were going to go. And I have to say, the presentation really did make it look like somebody who's reasonably tech-savvy could handle all of this. And I want to point out that in the conversation, the most conversation was about uploading the data and publishing the data. The part in the middle, the management, the how the tiles are created, and the on-the-fly projection stuff, we didn't get to really see that or understand how that's done. It may be as simple as it's just automatically done and you have no control, or there could be a very complex process that you interact with the data to move it through that. We didn't see that part. And again, I think that's because the goal here is, here's 80% of the solution, it's easy for you to implement, go for it.
And it's that 80% solution that we a lot of times discuss about, especially in the old days of desktop mapping, where solution vendors kept adding more and more and more functionality that the competition got so fierce. And how much did you actually really use of that functionality? You kind of used 20% of all of functionality, and that solved 80% of the problem. And as we know, a lot of the problem with geospatial data is storage and management. And there's a lot of time and effort put into that. And that's a problem, because really what you want to get at is the analysis and the publishing and the sharing of that data. And that's what it seems that this solution seems to have solved.
That's exactly what the focus is. It's get the data out of your servers, off of your servers, so you don't have to worry about that. Get it styled quickly and get it published into an environment that your consumers of your data already know. For example, Google Maps or the Google Earth client.
What Dylan Lorimore, the person who provided most of the detail on the webinar, said was that some of their focus was on data stewardship, and they gave three levels of administration: account managers, map editors, and map viewers. And people will remember a lot of discussion for many years, the doer, user, viewer model, the somewhat inverted triangle, about the potential of number of people that could use and view geospatial information, and that seemed to be one of their philosophies, was let's get it up there quickly, let's let people view it and let people map render as they need to. And they solved a lot of that problem. They seemed to make it easy. And one thing that I noticed about the presentation, it was very clear, it was laid out in very direct terms. There wasn't a lot of couched or nuanced type of discussion, and I appreciated that from that perspective. And I think that's what people were latching on to. It seemed simple.
It really did, and I think your suggestion about this being the new pyramid of GIS users is right on. And the only part that's really sort of missing is the heavy-duty analytical part. And that's, again, where I think that line is drawn. And what's on the other side of that line, of course, is all of the functionality that a company like ESRI would offer.
Yeah, sure. And for many people, you need that sense of ability to dig down and really do that heavy lifting. And that's not what Google Earth Builder is all about. I don't know if they have presented a pathway from some of the major GIS solution vendors to their solution. That's probably what a lot of the discussion is going to be about. Can I take my model and put it on the platform? Because they seem to have solved the viewing problem. But you're not going to get that same kind of level of analysis.
No, and I don't think, and this has been sort of an ongoing question that we've posed and others have posed about where Google is going with the GIS/geospatial. Are they going to move into that analytical space? And to date, they have not. And my sense is that there's plenty of room in this data storage, data management, data publishing. There's plenty of space to make a lot of money in here.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. And what was brought out in the webinar were another simplistic approach was to their pricing model. I thought a very, I don't know if it's unique, but it certainly seemed unique. And there were two levels, these two account tiers that they mentioned, one only for vector data and then a second for fully provisioned 3D models and raster imagery. And so both have a basic amount of storage and page views. And if you need more storage or you need more page views, you buy it. And the two scenarios that were set up were the user that would need a whole lot of storage, and they gave the example of 10 terabytes, but only 100,000 page views. You can envision a large agency with massive amounts of satellite image data, but it's only for internal use. The other case is also true where you have a minimal amount of storage, but the need to see it, in other words, the amount of page views could be millions of page views. That's the other way you buy it. And that also seemed direct. I don't know if it's simple is the right word, but it seemed it was understandable. And in the context of what all of cloud computing is all about, you need to make it simple because it's so new.
Tathos was an interesting way to divide it up, and my suspicion is that anybody involved in GIS for any amount of time, and especially in government, to imagine them only using vectors in the cloud, I can't think of a situation where that would be the case. I think a huge majority of folks are going to get that everything account, and let's be clear that the 3D is not supported yet.
Right.
Right now we've just got vectors and raster, and 3D is to come.
Now, before we close, the one big topic I think that is standing out there is this disruptive. There are several companies, both large and small, looking at offering cloud solutions. You can speculate the timing of this announcement and the information provided. Why was it done at this point? It's unusual for Google to come out in a beta form, because this product won't be available until the fall. They don't usually do things like this. I thought that was unusual. So how disruptive do you think this is to the rest of the geospatial cloud, the burgeoning cloud industry in geospatial?
I think it's a big deal. In fact, I think it's a far bigger deal than I understood it to be when it was announced at WARE. And here's a couple reasons. One of the questions on the webinar was about moving data from ArcGIS server to Google Earth Builder. And apparently there are tools in being developed to make that transition smooth. Also, I think it's really, again, going back to this idea that this isn't hard. This looks a lot like Google assigning which groups can see the data is just like using all those other Google tools that many organizations already use. And the other thing that I think is really important is this idea that there's going to be a whole series of APIs so that developers can put together the tools to upload different kinds of data. And the picture I'm having in my head, if we roll ahead a couple of years, is all your imagery data, maybe your basic map tiles, are all stored in this solution in Google Earth Builder in their native form. And then when you want to do the analysis, you go and touch them with other tools and lay that on top. So I think Google's drawn the line, and there are people on the other side that are going to provide, in a sense, the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm. How do you think it impacts other situations like OpenStreetMaps, Esri's community-based map program? Does this impact those kinds of developments?
The only way that I think it really impacts those is in the fact that when you put your data up into Google Earth Builder, by default, you overlay it on Google's base maps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people really like that. A lot of people are already doing that using the different APIs and so forth. And I think that's just a bonus. So if anything, I think it's going to mean fewer people are going to be relying on those other base maps. Now, having said all that, there is no reason that OpenStreetMap or even ESRI's community maps couldn't also be available in here. And one of the other interesting things that was mentioned coming along in the future is the ability for data providers to make their data available through Google Earth Builder for sale.
I think that's an interesting point, because the ability to sell data, in particular publicly owned data, for cost recovery has been a huge issue for many years. I don't know if this offers a platform to do that. As you said, you could envision that. That's one thing I never really thought about, but that's certainly a possibility.
Dylan actually said that.
They didn't, right? But I'm picking up on your point as to whether that's even a possibility.
I think it's a great possibility, and that bites into the space of WeoGeo
with
their data marketplace.
Right. And PBBI's GIOS concept of data as a service.
Powered by WeoGeo, yep.
Yeah, so interesting discussions for the future, to be sure. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, ESRI, would like to remind you that getting to know ArcGIS Model Builder from ESRI Press helps you create tools and automate geoprocessing workflows and models in ArcGIS. The book presents concepts and exercises and includes examples of models, Python scripts, and custom applications. For more information, visit esri.com/ESRI Press. If you'd like to leave a comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment in the comments section of where this podcast is posted on Directions Magazine. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.